Today, we are continuing our sermon series on the Lord's Prayer with getting down to one of the most practical, bodily, nitty-gritty parts of that prayer. And it's that line, "Give us this day our daily bread." This is one of those times in a sermon where I'm going to ask you to participate again, if you're willing. Don't be shy. And I have questions for you. How many of you here love to eat? Raise your hands. Now, here's one where you can raise your hand and call out something. What's one of your favorite foods, a food you couldn't live without?
Fried chicken.
Fried chicken? Nice one. Meatloaf. That's interesting. That must be some good meatloaf. You don't hear little boys say that every day. Meatloaf. Others?
Cheesecake.
Tacos. Nice. Ice cream. Are there any foods that you like and everyone thinks you're weird for liking them? Nobody else seems to like them very much. Brussels sprouts? I like those. But yeah, most people don't.
Liver.
Who likes liver? Oh, okay. A few strange people like liver. Anything else? Any weird? What is pickled eggs? You know, our youth helped to peel about 200 eggs for pickled eggs for a picnic up there in Harrisburg. You should go. You would have loved it. Now, one last question about food. What is a memory that you have surrounding food? Some sort of special memory that involves food? Yes, Zoe?
Christmas Eve dinner.
Oh, that's a good one. Christmas Eve dinner. The smell of fried chicken for the first time in the summer. Some kindred spirits here. Anyone else? Other memories involving food? Thanksgiving. That's a good one, Ezra. That's a really good one. We have all kinds of memories involving food, and even just the smell or taste of food can make us think of special memories. Because the thing is, if we think about it, most of our most deeply held traditions and our most precious memories are connected somehow to a meal. Family gatherings, sacred holidays, celebrations like birthdays and weddings, all of these things involve a meal. And there are food traditions that define a culture, define a culture's personality. So we live in a country where there's words like supersize me and extra value meal and things like that that define things we care about. In a lot of Latin American cultures, if your plate is clean, it doesn't mean you're full. It means you want some more, that they want to give you some more. So food has meaning. Food has a lot of power. And it can be for good or ill. Sometimes the power that food has can be something that weighs on us, literally. So I'll confess to you, I sometimes watch reality TV, and I pick and choose my shows, and one of the ones that I've always enjoyed is The Biggest Loser. On the air since 2004, I cry, I get inspired, I'm inspired by the contestants because it's such a long battle for them to lose, sometimes hundreds of pounds. But one of the things that fascinates me about that show is that the contestants, they get into their stories as they're trying to lose the weight, and more often than not, these contestants have something incredibly sad or devastating that has happened to them in their lives that has led them to be 400, 500, even 600 pounds. Something has happened, whether it be abuse or a loss or some kind of tragedy, something they've struggled with that has made them now stuck to where food is an anchor. It's something they count on for meaning and for hope, where maybe there doesn't feel like there is anything else to offer that kind of stuff. In our country, there are over 20 million women and 10 million men who suffer from clinically recognized eating disorders. And if you were to add in those of us, if you think about yourself or people you love, if you were to add in those of us who use food to feel better or use food to numb ourselves during hard times, that number would be a lot higher. So food has a lot of power. And some of us even wear its power on our bodies in the form of extra pounds. Jesus knew that we put things into our bodies and they affect us. They affect our spiritual lives even. And it's no accident that he chose to create rituals like communion, sacred rituals around food, and he told stories involving food. And then it's also no accident that in this Lord's Prayer, we go from saying big statements like, "Thy kingdom come," right down into the everyday life of our everyday needs. we go right in from talking about your kingdom come into something as practical as give us this day our daily bread, our food, what we need to survive. This part of the prayer gives us a lot to think about when it comes to how we approach God with our personal needs, our desires, our wishes, just the everyday things. How do we come to God with those things? Do we believe God wants to hear about them? Do we believe God can provide for them? This part of the prayer has a lot to teach us. And we have to take note, in this prayer, we're directed to ask only for our daily bread, just enough for today, just enough to meet our needs for today. And that word enough, that's almost taboo in our culture because we live in a culture that is never satisfied, that prides itself on never quite having enough, always pushing for the next best thing, always striving for more. I've done an experiment when I've prepped for my sermons at times using Google, and I did it this week too. I started typing into Google the phrase, "Do I have enough?" and then let Google fill in the blank, because it fills in the blank with what other people look for most often. And the thing that came up most often when I put into Google, "Do I have enough?" was, "Do I have enough money to retire?" And that might not surprise some of you. People in our country are living a lot longer. We're living into our 80s and 90s, and we're going to be retired for decades. And people are worried about security. They want to feel prosperous and able to enjoy the finer things in life and one day stop working so hard. It seems like there's never quite enough to give people that sense of security that they'll have enough for their futures. And then I searched for the phrase, "When is enough enough?" just to see what would come up. I had no idea. And overwhelmingly, the results of that search, "When is enough enough?" was in relationship to divorce, marriage, ending relationships. Human beings, it turns out, can have enough when it comes to struggle. Love can run out if things get too hard. We know in our world, unconditional love is not a given. It's not the norm. It does seem like there isn't enough love sometimes to make it through the tough times with someone, and many of us have been there. Enough implies different things when we're talking about money or food or love or whatever else. And this part of the prayer not only asks God for help in getting those small day-to-day things, but it's intended to help us think, to meditate on what is really truly enough for us. What is our daily bread? What we need versus what we think we want? Notice, Jesus does not say, "Give us today our daily cake. Give us this week our weekly groceries." In the ideal prayer, we ask for just enough for today, and we ask for the simple things. We're teaching ourselves contentment with the simple things. Each day will have its own provisions, and we only pray for that day. This is a hard lesson to learn, and it was also hard for the people of Israel. So you heard in that reading from Exodus, they had just been freed from slavery and even experienced a huge miracle. In order to escape from slavery, the waters of the Red Sea were parted for them, and they walked through on dry land. So the people of Israel had all this big, dramatic Exodus story, and then all of a sudden the drama stopped. And the drudgery of trying to survive in the wilderness began. And the big question of how to survive, of course, was, what are we going to eat? And they would get so worried about this hunger and how they were going to provide for themselves that they actually regretted leaving slavery. The people of Israel grumbled and complained and said, "You know, maybe we were better off as slaves. At least we got our meal." God's gracious response to that sort of complaining was to send bread from heaven, or manna. He sent it every morning, just enough for that day, to be gathered and to be shared. And they were excited at first because, oh my gosh, another miracle, bread from heaven. But it wasn't long before they said, "You know, this just doesn't feel like enough. I'm not satisfied. I crave meat." And so they would ask God and complain to God and say, "This isn't enough." And then they came up with the bright idea of worrying about the future enough to say, "You know what we should do? let's hoard and store some of the manna that's coming down. We won't eat it all today. We'll save it just in case, because something bad might happen and there might not be enough. So let's store it away. And you know what would happen to that stored away manna was that it would spoil almost immediately. Because God wanted to send them the message, I am giving you enough for today. You have to trust me. Israel fell prey over and over again to something that we continue to struggle with way long after they were alive. We struggle with it too, and it has a name. Economists and psychologists call this struggle the scarcity mentality. Have any of you ever heard of that? The scarcity mentality. I know I feel it. I look into a cupboard or a pantry that is bursting with food, and I feel really strangely soothed. I feel taken care of, like everything's okay. And if there's nothing in there, or it looks like nothing, my chef husband could make nothing into something, but I'll look in there and see a couple of cans and a bag of rice and think, oh no, and have a moment of panic. And God forbid if a storm is coming like a blizzard, and I know people are going to mob the stores and they're going to be buying up all the toilet paper and water, and I think we better get there and stock up ahead of them. There's just not enough to go around. That's the scarcity mentality. That sense of panic, that sense that there just isn't enough for everybody. And it's not just about stuff. The scarcity mentality, it applies to all kinds of things, not just things like food and toilet paper, but it also affects how we look at other people and what they have. We begrudge other people their accomplishments and their success and their happiness. If they have a happiness that we don't have right now, we think, there just isn't enough for everyone. There isn't enough love for everyone. We can't be happy for each other. Everybody can't be special. Everybody can't be number one. We fall prey to envy, and that's that scarcity mentality. And Jesus is constantly challenging the scarcity mentality in us and in his disciples. He provides enough when his followers are convinced there just isn't enough. This time we're going to run out. He provided enough bread and fish to feed over 5,000 people from just one little boy's lunch, one little boy who was willing to share. When his disciples would argue over who was his favorite, who does he like the best, who's going to sit at his right hand, he provided enough connection that they all felt truly deeply connected to him. In Jesus' world, there is always more to give than meets the eye. In our world, people of faith, there's always more to be given to us than meets the eye. The other thing to notice about this prayer is that we do not pray, give me my daily bread. We pray, give us this day our daily bread. Because we're called to ensure that as we are getting our daily needs met, getting what we need, that we are not taking away from what someone else needs. People of faith are called to remember that other people are hungry too. In fact, 805 million people, that's 1 in 9 people, will go to bed today without enough food to eat. Hunger and malnutrition is the world's number one health risk. It's greater than AIDS and malaria and tuberculosis combined. Hunger, just not enough food to go around apparently, but people who study this say there is enough. In theory, there should be enough. It's just not distributed right. But all these people are hungry. And we have to remember them as people of faith. We're called to remember them. And then still others in a community like this, where maybe there aren't as many hungry people, at least not visibly, we could look around at our neighbors and our friends or at ourselves and see people who are hungry for other kinds of things. People who are hungry for joy and peace because they're depressed or they're grieving or they're angry at someone and they can't let it go. Maybe there's people who are hungry for connection with someone because they're so lonely. Maybe there's people who are hungry for meaning because the world is just not making sense. And part of praying this prayer, this line of the prayer, is it builds into us a habit to seek God as a means of spiritual survival. So the way that Israel was so concerned, what are we going to eat today? What are we going to eat today? We're called to have a spirit of, how are we going to be sustained by God today? The same way that I said those people out there playing Pokemon Go are frantically looking everywhere like this, we're called to have a spirit that searches that way for God, always ready to give to us, always ready to give his presence to us. And each day is a new opportunity to do that, to reflect on what we really truly need and how God might be offering it up to us. What we need on a day when we're lounging on a beach and on vacation is going to be different than a day when we are wringing our hands in the hospital room. It's going to be different than on days when a minute seems like an hour because we're so anxious to get news about someone we love. Many of us have burdens in our lives that, much like Israel wandering for 40 years, feel like they've been going on forever. Many of us have struggles that are more than just days or weeks or months, and we are hungering for something to show us that it's all going to work out. So, for example, maybe you have a marriage or relationship or friendship that has been on the rocks for a long time and feels ready to unravel, and you wonder, are we going to stay together? Are we going to stay friends? Are we going to stay in each other's lives? How is it all going to work out? But God gives us the grace to love and act and decide just for today. That's all we get. Maybe some of you are caring for somebody who is ill in some way, who needs so much of your help, and you're pouring yourself into them, and you wonder, when am I going to get some rest? When am I finally going to get some peace? And God gives us just enough strength and humor for the needs of today. And then tomorrow is a new day, and God will be waiting with us to meet each day as it comes. I just got back from this amazing mission trip, like I told you, with all these middle schoolers, and you'll be hearing more from them and from the high schoolers in the coming weeks, more details about what that was like. But I can tell you one thing. I pulled them aside, I think on the last night, and I said, you know, I realize I've been at Christ Our Anchor for about 5 months now, and you five kids, I've spent more time with you than I have anybody else in the church by far. Because here we were spending 16 hours a day together, 7 a.m. until 11 p.m., every day for 5 days straight, and working hard for most of that time, right? Every day felt like it was our last ounce of energy that we were using, but then we would wake up and we would have some more. God would provide some more, so we can attest to this kind of scenario where we are waiting on God each day to give us what we need. We can count on God. We can depend on God for this daily bread. In closing, I want to read you what I think is a beautiful illustration from nature about the dependability of God for these kinds of things. And it's from a book called The Holy Wild by Mark Buchanan. He writes, "Behold, imagine a single leaf. Hold it open in your palm. This single leaf, joined to the tree, drinks poison or carbon dioxide from the air and refuses to return it in kind, instead spilling out life-giving oxygen. That's how this one little leaf works, was made to work, a leaf. God makes these season after season, one after another, billions upon billions, and most of them for no eye but his own. He does it faithfully, or else you and I would not live to tell about it. We all rely on each other. We rely on something as small as a single little leaf, and God has made us to be able to depend on each other and on him. If God does all that for a single common leaf, just think how much more God can do for each one of us. Don't ask how God will get you through tomorrow. My challenge for you today is to focus on today, look at today, and open your eyes to what God is trying to give you or feed you or create in you. Just enough. Amen.